Welcome to the Empowering Agency Workers, the podcast for all temporary workers. If you're unsure of your rights, unsure how to find work, or just plain unsure, we're here to help. It's all too easy to be exploited, so your expert host, Julia Kermode, will empower you to succeed.
Hi, thanks for joining me today. I'm delighted to be joined today by Lorna Davidson. She's Chief Executive at Red Wigwam, which in her own words is the Tinder of recruitment. It uses algorithms to connect and match workers with clients. So it's an online platform. And one of the things we're going to be talking about is, you know, the role of online platforms and the gig economy. Particularly, we're going to hear about how people are using platforms to try out new things and to take control of their work, take control of how, where and when they work, and how you can use platforms to ensure you've got a stable income. And so there's a lot of positives out there about platforms. So without further ado, let's get started. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm delighted to have with me Lorna Davidson, who is Chief Executive of Red Wigwam. And today we're looking at new ways of finding work and minimizing risk. So Lorna, could you perhaps just give us a brief introduction about yourself?
Hi, Julia. Yes, my name is Lorna Davidson and I'm one of those terrible serial entrepreneurs. So having done this once, I've started again. But one of the things that I'm really passionate about is treating people correctly and about doing the right thing with people. And one of the things that I was hugely frustrated about was that actually getting hold of really great temporary staff was very difficult. And I recognise that's because they're probably not always treated as well as they could be. So I had the notion that I would build an online platform that would match workers and hirers, and we call them wigwammers, not workers, but workers and hirers, for anything from a 15-minute task to a three-month contract.
Okay.
So what I was trying to facilitate was people that wanted to work in a flexible way, that we would allow them to do so it could fit around their life in any way that they saw fit. So that's Red Wigwam.
Fantastic. And I have to say, from my perspective, we love serial entrepreneurs. This you are the backbone of the UK economy. So any future ideas you've got bubbling under, keep them going, because we need to get the UK economy into recovery. But just thinking about Red Wigwam, it's quite an interesting model. And I would sum it up as a cross between the gig economy, a recruitment agency, and also employed workers. But how would you sum it up? Because that's actually more important than my perception.
Yeah, I think your perception is spot on, because it's all of those things. But I think the thing that's a little bit different, and I quite often describe it as, we're a little bit like a dating site.
Okay.
So we've got a very clever algorithm that works out against people's skills, their experience, but also their attributes. Are they likely to turn up for work on time, etc.? And we match those people to the hirer's requirements. So that's how we do things a little bit differently. But what we also do is we then do all the, and I'm going to call it boring stuff, but it's really important stuff, where we check people's right to work in the UK by using tech. So we use things like facial recognition. Yeah. We then make sure we've booked them. We then make sure we've reminded them in every which way. We do lots of different things to make them happen. And then what we do is we pay them incredibly quickly. So you can work for me today and get paid tomorrow. So we pay within 24 hours of your timesheet being signed off. Wow. So we are an unusual blend of all the things you've described. But what and rightly or wrongly, I'm not a recruiter by background. So although I work in the recruitment market now, I've done lots of recruitment, but I don't class myself as a recruiter. So what I class myself as is somebody that's a tech-enabled service provider.
Okay, great. And so I think when we were chatting before, we kind of said that, to sum it up, it's almost like the Tinder of temping, which I absolutely love that. I think that's a fantastic description. And I love all the tech that goes on behind it. And when you say about the kind of boring stuff, I imagine from the worker's perspective, that is a bit boring, but it has to happen. And it's so important, isn't it?
It's a legal requirement, and one of the things we think is important is that you actually make sure that you are not just legally correct but also morally correct. Okay. So for us, it's really important to do the right thing by people and make sure that, you know, and we don't always get it right, you know, so I will be the first to hold my hand up if we've not got something right and say, whoops, that was a mistake, let's figure it out. But for me, we're a people-centric business, and therefore we have to look after our staff.
Do you know, just going off topic already, that makes such a nice change, because yesterday I was talking to someone for a different episode of the podcast all about the different job scams that there are out there and the fact that a lot of businesses are not putting people first at the moment and they're kind of exploiting vulnerable people. So actually, I love any business that does put people first. And I do think gig workers, temporary workers, and that type of person is potentially a bit vulnerable at the moment to being exploited.
Absolutely. I think they are vulnerable, but I think again that for me was the thing that was very important. But I also think the world's changed. Mm-hmm. So I think they're less vulnerable because of what we've gone through with COVID than they were beforehand, because I think they're actually recognized as some real value. So, yes. You know, when we went into COVID, we had over 10,000 people register with us in the first fortnight.
Wow.
And those were people that were pilots, tailors, you know, people that would never normally work in the gig economy, as you described it, but actually recognized they needed to earn some extra cash. And we were a great way of doing that. And therefore, I think actually have got a newfound respect for people that work in this flexible way.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And for me, the whole thing about our experience of COVID in recent months is the thing that I really like about it is that as a nation, we've got a much better respect for supermarket workers and key workers and delivery drivers and all of those types of people that traditionally is kind of slightly looked down upon role. But actually, we've needed those people to keep us going.
Absolutely. And I think the people that have done those type of jobs. So we've a gentleman that did a piece to camera for us, because he put a lovely piece out in social media, and he'd just done a shift in Morrison's for us.
Okay.
And he came back and said, basically, oh my God, I had no idea it was such hard work.
Yeah.
I walk into supermarket, I never think about it. I never think about who's doing it. It's such hard work. I'm going to take my hat off to those people now. And that's when you realize that actually it's a good leveler for us, what we've been through in terms of hopefully treating people properly and with lots of respect.
Yeah, that's so true. And I know your business recently did some research into what has been happening since COVID and the lockdown started. And as we've already touched on, we are getting used to working in very different ways. You know, there's a lot of virtual meetings going on, not so many face-to-face meetings. And so what kind of insights are you getting from the employers, your kind of the clients that are using flexible workers? From your research or just in general, and are there variations by sector?
Complete variations by sector, and I think that's the biggest thing. And I think from our perspective, if I'm honest, the best thing we've been able to do for our workers is lots of different types of work, because we go across a number of sectors.
Okay.
So lots of people, we do a lot of work in hospitality, obviously that completely dried up. If we'd been just a hospitality agency, then our staff wouldn't have had any other options.
Right.
Whereas what we've been able to do is put them into logistics, we've been able to put them into retail, we've been able to give them some skills that they might not have recognised beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully improving their ability to go on and get work. So I think it's absolutely affected different sectors in a very different way. I think the thing that's been interesting, though, and the debate I have with a lot of our hirers is, actually, I'm doing okay at the moment. You know, I'm quite busy. But do I want to risk taking somebody on full time in case it all changes?
Yeah.
So what we're finding is hirers are being a little bit more cautious in how they recruit people.
Yeah.
And therefore, we're having people saying to us, well, I'll take them from you for 3 months and then I'll see how it goes. So, a little bit of try like a buy, but actually see how business just works out. And the other thing we've had, which has really surprised me, is we've had people say, I want to take somebody on full time, but actually I'm a bit nervous. Could you take them on for me? So if I can offer them 40 hours a week, I can only maybe offer them 30. Maybe you'll be able to give them something else that will top their salary up.
Okay. So you're taking the employment risk from the client there.
Correct.
That's a neat way to do things, actually. So you're minimizing your client's risk, but also giving that worker work and hopefully topping them up with something else.
Absolutely. And also what we're trying to say to our hirers is, don't not make a decision to try and keep going. You know, don't try and, if you need somebody, take them and try and make it work, rather than, you know, the worst thing, as you mentioned earlier about the economy, the last thing we all need to be is handcuffed and not make decisions because we're too scared about what's coming.
Yeah, that is so true. We are in such an uncertain place at the moment. And I think if I was looking at kind of whether I needed any staff, I would certainly be nervous right now. So I think yeah. I very much sympathize with those businesses that are just taking people on short term. It's not so easy for those people themselves, of course, because how can they make long-term plans if they're working on lots of short-term assignments? But I suppose you'll have a better idea from your insights. But if they've got confidence that there are going to be more short-term assignments once that finishes, you know, then I guess some work is better than no work ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think also our wigwammers are seeing a different view on life. Mm-hmm. So a number of them that have joined us because they have either been furloughed or they've actually lost their job or are fearing that they're going to lose their job. Mm-hmm. I think they're saying, actually, I don't like this happening to me. I'm going to try and take a bit of control.
Yeah.
And so bizarrely, in a way, working with us flexibly allows them a little bit more control. They're spreading their risk because I'm working in different sectors as well. I'm not, you know, hospitality goes again. That's not everything gone. Yeah. So they're spreading their own risk and they're actually taking a bit of control. So bizarrely, I think we are seeing the increase in workers' strength.
Yeah. And I guess because they can try new things on a very flexible basis, they can think, oh, actually, I don't really like that. I'll try something else. Or I actually really enjoy that. Let's do a bit more of that. So,
yeah. And one of the things we're very keen on is that people sometimes don't recognize what they're good at because they've just never done it before.
Yeah.
So we say to people, try different things. And, we take students, return to work parents and recently retired are our sort of target. Mm. And as a mother of three boys, mm-hmm. it won't surprise you that I've had all three of them working through the business and two of them now in the business, but three of them through the business. But my middle son, I was helping him write his CV for something and he had very limited work experience. Mm. So he then spent two summers working with Red Wigwam and he suddenly went from having very little on his CV to he worked hospitality, he'd been a receptionist, he'd done some market research, he'd worked in multiples, the grocers, he'd done lots of different things. He then knew lots of things he didn't want to ever do again.
Yes.
You know, but at least he had some view and suddenly he had a CV that he could talk about.
Yeah, and also the different skills. So I always, one of the things I'll always bang on about is I think almost we should have national service for people to have to do some sort of customer service role. Because when I think back to when I was kind of school leaving age, I worked as a waitress and I loved it. And actually dealing with people face to face in that type of role, and I realise obviously waitressing is not the answer to our current situation, but for me that hard customer facing role, whether it's as a waitress, whether it's someone at McDonald's, whether it's someone, you know, in a supermarket, I just almost think we need that national service. I think people have to go through that as a rite of passage because it really gives you loads of skills.
Well, it gives you loads of skills, but it also makes you recognize how hard other people work and therefore hopefully you treat people better when you're on the opposite side. So I'm with you. I think it's a really good skill to learn, but I think it's also a really good experience to make you, without sounding too cliche, but a better person.
Yeah, and a bit more tolerant and you know, having to, unfortunately, we are in a society where people aren't always polite and having to deal with that is tough, actually. And it does kind of set you up for all sorts of future challenges. But anyway, I'm not here to, I shouldn't be ranting on about my own personal views. But what do you think will be the trends in temporary work over the coming months, just from kind of your experience and what you're seeing?
Well, temporary work's definitely in the increase. So as we said, sector obviously different, but we're doing a huge amount of work in logistics and not surprised that everybody's gearing up. We call it the golden quarter, but coming up to Christmas. So with all the sort of increase in internet shopping, we've already seen, and actually Christmas looking like it's going to be even stranger, we are having huge demand on us in terms of we need people in warehousing to pack and pick, we need drivers. Mm-hmm. So people are really sort of gearing up and I think actually gearing up earlier this year than normal.
Okay, yeah, because I guess our experience earlier this year was of shortages in supermarkets, and you know, Christmas may be difficult enough for some people without having shortages. So yeah, that's interesting.
Absolutely. Well, and it's so if you look, I'm now going to bore you with facts about supermarkets, but obviously Christmas is a huge period for the retail trade, but particularly supermarkets. And actually, the 24th of December is the biggest day in the retail calendar. That day has been delivered in March, April, May and June by the big retailers already. Okay. So they've already experienced that level of spike in trade.
I see. Yeah.
Early on. So that's when they say actually they're operating at a higher level already, mm-hmm. but actually we've got to go again. And that's the bit about how do they go again.
Wow. And the temporary workforce will be key to that, I expect.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, one of the things that has been really heartening during COVID is we've had a number of people that have gone into a role on a temporary basis. Mm-hmm. And the hirers like them, they've liked the hirer and they've then stayed.
Perfect.
And so we encourage that. You know, we encourage our workers if they find something that they love and the hirer loves them, please go ahead and work together. We'd never stop that in any way.
Yeah, that's really good. And I know some agencies have obviously different financial clauses in place where it then becomes an introductory fee type of arrangement. I'm not 100% clear on exactly how that side of things works.
Yeah, I think that's you're right. It's how it normally works. So I've got a slightly different view. So I charge it, and I'll tell you what it is. It's £199 transfer fee.
Okay.
So I'm not into making profit out of, you've seen my guy, I don't want, you know, half their salary for the next year. I just charge £199 transfer fee. And then hopefully you'll both go away thinking that Red Wigwam did the right thing.
Yeah. And then I guess you're also then thinking of future business and that kind of, I hate to say feel good factor, because that sounds really fluffy. But actually, I think that feel good factor is really, really important now more than ever.
Absolutely. And also the thing for me was I could never keep somebody out of a job. So I would hate somebody not to get an opportunity because of a set of fees that I was holding over somebody's head. So that's not how I operate.
Yeah.
So for me, again, it's back to this doing the right thing by everybody.
Yeah.
And if you do the right thing by everybody, then A, I'll sleep better at night, but hopefully it will be repaid in a different way.
Yeah. I completely get that. And I mean, in terms of kind of doing the right things, there has been some negative publicity over the years about the so-called precarious nature of gig working or being a temp, etc. And you know, I did say at the start that, you know, some people at the moment who are job searching who haven't been previously used to job searching, I think are particularly vulnerable. And so how do you kind of react to that potential criticism, not necessarily of your business, but, you know, the broader sector as a whole?
I think it's a valid criticism. And I think if you look at some of the press coverage, you know, some of it's a little bit over the top, but some of it's actually very true. So one of the things for me that's important is we employ our staff directly. So we pay them, we put them through the books, we pay their PAYE, we do their holiday pay, we do the pension, we do all the right things. But there's lots of companies that chosen not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones that I think are slightly more precarious. Those are the ones that I think actually it would be good if they could think about their workers' rights. Now, I also believe that sometimes that doesn't mean you have to be fully employed.
Mm-hmm.
So I've read some really interesting articles about actually, and I think Uber was the example, could they put together sort of a pot of cash that's used to support their workers in whichever way they see fit?
Yeah, okay.
Now that actually might be a nice way to do it. It doesn't always have to be the same way, but I do think there has to be a way of protecting people and trying to make sure that they have got the best chance in succeeding in life. Life's tough enough for everybody.
Yes.
If you don't know where your next wage packet's coming from, that must be quite scary.
Yeah, it must be. And I have heard of some of the platforms out there offering different ways that people can choose to be engaged. So, for example, they might choose to be engaged as a worker and have worker rights from the legal perspective rather than as a self-employed person. And they offer a different income structure, and they offer that individual the choice as to how they want to be engaged. And I think that was a reaction to some of the criticism criticism. And some of the criticism of the sector is very vitriolic, I think, from some perspectives. But I do agree with you that actually, I think that these types of workers could be vulnerable. And one of the things I'm trying to do with these podcasts is to equip people with the knowledge so that they have a better awareness as to their rights and what they should be expecting from people.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing that people forget is that this suits some workers.
Yes, absolutely.
They like to work in this way. You know, it really is a fit for their lifestyle. And everybody sort of goes on the crusade bit, but actually for some people, this is a great fit.
Yeah, I remember the Uber case, actually, when that first hit the headlines, and there was not really a backlash, I wouldn't say it that strongly, but there were certainly some drivers who I saw on current affairs programmes saying, no, we like the flexibility of being self-employed. Yeah. So, you know, the guy that brought that case about, he obviously felt he had a case, and that's absolutely fine, and that's his prerogative to do that. But actually, it's not necessarily one size fits all, is it?
No, absolutely. And you know, as I say, we work with people that want to work flexibly. That's the whole premise of the business. And therefore, we do employ them. But actually, we quite often get asked, well, can I be self-employed? Can I? And, you know, we've made the decision no. But I can see why we might reconsider at some point.
Yeah, and I guess from some perspectives, the decision to not allow them to be self-employed, it then means they're paid through PAYE, presumably. So they are taxed at source before you pay them. But equally, that then means they don't have to do a tax return. They don't have to worry about that side of things, right?
Absolutely. So, and because they work for us and they can do lots of different types of jobs, it means they don't have lots of different hirers with different tax codes.
Of course, it all
comes through in one. So again, we think it makes it much simpler to sort of manage your affairs because you're coming through one employer.
Yeah, that's neat, actually. Often if they're with kind of a more traditional recruitment agency, those types of recruitment agencies often specialise in different sectors, whereas with your type of business, they can try different skills and different job roles.
Absolutely.
And just thinking about that, actually, they can obviously then kind of do different job roles and kind of pull together a bit of a portfolio of different ways of working with you. And I think when we were chatting before, we mentioned that you've got some people who are doing extra bits on top of other employment.
Yeah, and we've definitely seen an increase in this since COVID. So this is where people have been topping up their salary. Mm-hmm. So they might work, you know, Monday to Friday, 5 days a week, but actually go out at the weekend and, you know, do a bar job for us or something like that. It's an extra way of earning some cash. We're definitely seeing an increase in that. So 13% of our staff now are looking to actually add on to their salaries rather than just replace them. So that is a big change for us. Yeah. But again, indicative of the world we're living in.
Yeah, and I guess that does potentially have a difficult moral standpoint for you as a business, because if they're working kind of 40 hours a week elsewhere and then they want to top up with yourselves, do you feel like there's a duty on you to kind of ensure these people have work-life balance? Or, I mean, it's their choice at the end of the day, surely.
It is their choice, but we do have a duty of care. And that's so we do, we've got an e-learning course that talks about actually managing your life, not burning out, not doing too much, etc. The problem I have is I can control what they do within my site.
Yeah.
I can't control what they do without it. So if somebody's working too many hours within my site, I can stop that. But I don't know what they're doing elsewhere. So we were trying to educate people rather than control people in terms of what's a sensible way to live their life.
Yeah, and it's about equipping them to make their own informed decisions then, isn't it?
You know,
and
absolutely.
That's critical at the moment, because there's so much we don't have control over in our lives right now to take more control away from people would seem kind of wrong.
Well, and it's a silly thing, but it's exactly that. So people will say to me all the time, you know, so-and-so's not turned up for work because they're not well. What should we do? They don't turn up for well, but they're not well. We don't want anybody going out for work that's not well.
Yeah.
But we also have a requirement that we have to meet the hirer's, you know, specification. So we have this real balance as well, where normally you'd be saying, well, actually, hold on a minute. Why have they failed to turn up twice? Should we be working with this person? Now we're saying, actually, we don't know if they're ill. We don't know if they're self-isolating. Mm. And therefore, we have to take a slightly different approach to that this time.
Yeah, and actually we've seen a sort of a general change within business in the last few months. And I think businesses are more inclined to trust their workers a bit more because I did see something the other day about businesses spying on their teams working from home, yeah. Essentially, and it just was so outdated. I was horrified, and I genuinely think that's the minority. And I think now that businesses have had to get used to a flexible way of working, I think they do trust workers a bit more than they used to.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So there's two points in there. One for me is flexible working isn't home working.
No.
So everybody refers to flexible working because we're working from home, and actually I'm not sure they're the same thing. But I read an
interesting
fact. Glad
you picked me up on that. Yeah, that you're absolutely right.
Yeah, but I read an interesting fact about trust, and that was that the reason that employers don't like their staff working from home is that 60% of them don't trust their staff to do the right job. After COVID, that's gone down to 35%.
Okay, great.
So it's not quite where we'd want it to be, but it's definitely moving the right way. People are beginning to open their mind and go, actually, and I know myself, I spend a lot of time with my team who've been working at home saying, actually, will you turn your laptop off now? you know, because we operate 24/7. Mm. It's really easy to work 24/7 when you're at home.
Yeah.
So I've had to work really quite hard at saying to people, just... should you be doing this, take some time off, just stop now. So
I think that's a really, really good point to make. And I've worked from home for the last, 7 years, something like that. And people are like, well, how do they know you're working? And I just say, well, I haven't got time to not work. Otherwise stuff won't get done.
Absolutely.
I'm just glad that the rest of the world is catching up a little bit to that way of thinking. But also, like you've just said, I do know some businesses who are almost overworking because you are now got it all to hand at home, haven't we?
Yeah. And also because people are at home, particularly during lockdown, people felt obliged to answer you.
Yes.
You know, so if you asked a question, they felt obliged, they had to answer. You go, actually, it's all right to stop work at 7 o'clock at night. They don't feel like you've got to answer me. Yeah. And so it's that type of thing that I think we've just got to be careful of. I think the other big thing and we work very hard on this within the business, is when you work flexibly, you're not always have somebody available to talk to. So you don't always have a line manager. We have things like live chat. We try and sort of communicate with our Wigwammers as much as we can. Mm. But I think that's one of the skills as managers we're going to have to learn going forward, is how to manage remote teams.
Yes. Yes.
So people you can't see every day to know if they're having a good or bad day. You've got to be able to be much more intuitive in terms of how you pick up on the signals.
Yeah.
If people are in a great place or a bad place.
And as a platform that is kind of, as we said earlier, the Tinder of temping, do you feel you've got a responsibility there to kind of support your Wigwammers when, you know, and making sure that their mental health is okay? Because we're so aware of mental health now, aren't we? Which is, again, another positive out of where we're at. But where do you see your role within that?
I do think it's very important. And again, it's one of the things we are hoping to encompass with our e-learning.
Mm.
The problem we have is because we don't see everybody, and you know, there's nearly 150,000 of them now, we're growing incredibly quickly.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to do that. But we talk a lot in the business about responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk a lot about our Wigwammers taking responsibility for how they feel, how they've been treated. You know, if something's not right, they have a responsibility to tell me rather than put up with it.
Yeah.
So it's those things. So again, we talk about their mental health, that you've got a responsibility to put your hand up if you're not feeling great, and we can see what we can do to help.
Yeah.
But without sort of seeing everybody as much as you would in a normal business, that becomes quite difficult.
Yeah. And with that number, it is huge. And I think you're quite right. You are limited with that number as to what you can do. So the more you can empower people to take responsibility for themselves is, I think, definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
So just thinking about kind of your business and compared to some others out there, because there are lots of different platforms. There's platforms for, I discovered one the other day that was for people with disabilities. That's kind of their market. And there's all sorts of different things. And I guess there must be different standards amongst different platform providers, if I can call you a platform provider, this conversation. So in terms of, from the worker's perspective, how can they kind of navigate the differences between a better provider and perhaps a less good one? Is there anything they can look out for?
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think it is a difficult one, but I think it's also very important, in the same way if you're buying a product, is to look at people's reviews. Yeah. So look at people's live experiences with this. It's all out on the internet. You know, you've got FIFO, you've got Trustpilot, you've got all of them where they're picking up these reviews. Mm. They're a really good indicator of what type of work you're going to get, how you're going to be treated, etc. So I would definitely be using that as part of my research. The other thing I would do is I'd ask other people that work within the business, how have you found this? And we, you know, we do lots on social media. We have special Facebook groups, things like that. I'm sure the other guys have the same. Yeah. You'd be able to go on there and get an idea, but definitely I'd go and have a look at reviews. Some are always a bit bizarre, you know, because people can be a bit bizarre.
Yeah.
But I think they're a good indicator. And for me, it's not only just the review, but it's about how the company replies to the review.
Yes, yeah.
I think that's a real indication of who you're going to go and work for.
Yeah, and I love that whole thing of looking at reviews, and I don't buy anything online without checking the reviews. And so actually this is just another part of that same process, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And for us, it's about doing the right thing and therefore living in, you know, failing by what people say about you. If we're getting it wrong and they're saying it, well, actually, I need to do something about it. So we take our reviews very seriously.
Yeah, and you do obviously get some random ones. I mean, anything, you know, any business does. But yeah, when you said it's about how you handle that, I think that's so true as well. Because, you know, just thinking of, I don't know, restaurant reviews, for example, and you will sometimes get Mr. or Mrs. Angry that has been to a restaurant and they will just type out the most awful thing, and then it's about how do they respond to that, because that sort of review doesn't necessarily put me off, just depending on how it's responded to.
And that for me is it. So that would be the thing I'd encourage anybody to do, is have a look at the reviews, have a look and see what people using the systems are saying about it.
Yeah, and I think if, connecting people with others and making use of social media is so important as well. And I have found that you know, if someone wants to connect with someone else and just ask them a question, rarely would anyone just say no and not want to share their experience with them. So, you know.
Well, we talk about community a lot within Red Wigwam. So one of the things that we think is important is, we did a piece of research. We were actually thinking about crowdfunding. So we wrote to our workers to say, if we were to crowdfund, what do you think? And 60% of them said that if we crowdfunded, they'd like to invest.
Wow.
And when I said, and when I said to them, well, if you were going to invest, what would you like back? Thinking they would give me profit, equity, all the normal answers. And what they actually asked for was first choice of jobs and to be involved in Red Wigwam events.
Wow, okay.
So although we're sort of online and we don't meet, people still want to belong.
Yeah.
So we work very hard. We have Red Wigwam socials. We try very hard to sort of build that community of people that might be, I might not stand next to you at the coffee machine, but actually I still feel like you're my my colleague. I still feel like you're part of it. And so one of the things I love is when we have, you know, we have Facebook groups, etc. If a worker asks, a wigwammer asks a question and another wigwam answers it rather than it being the business that has to answer it.
Yeah.
And then they start to sort of feed themselves in a way.
Perfect.
By being supportive.
And I think the whole online communities type of thing has grown in the last few months. Well, it has certainly, the things I've been involved with have certainly grown. And I think people are, because perhaps people aren't out and about as much, people are turning to online communities for that extra bit of support or reassurance.
Yeah, and I've put myself out there personally during COVID, etc. So I've done a lot of Facebook Lives and things like that, where I've allowed workers to come and ask me questions.
Brilliant.
You know, what do we think about this? What do we think about that? And I always work in the principle that, you know, I'll be as honest as I can be so that I can help people. So they've worked quite well for us. We did them weekly when we went into lockdown. Mm-hmm. And then we said we'd do them sort of once a month type of thing. But we do a sort of a live action where anybody can ask me anything they like.
That's fantastic. And I remember when we went into lockdown, there was so much uncertainty and nobody kind of knew what support was coming from the government. There was probably about a 4 to 5 week time lag in terms of the different support measures that were announced. And in that period of time, I just remember from my own experience, just feeling very nervous about what was happening and you know, to be a wigwammer and to have access to someone, even though you probably didn't have the answers because there were no answers, but just to have that reassurance that, yeah, I don't know either, I'm afraid, you know.
Yeah. I think also, so one of the questions I'm asked all the time when I do these lives is, how are you finding it? Mm-hmm. And I think it is because you become, you know, you're an online platform, it feels a bit impersonal. Actually, I'm putting myself out there. So people are saying, yeah, oh, actually, I can now see the face of Red Wigwam. And they want to know how I feel. And of course, it'd be easy to say, oh, it's been a breeze, I've coped with everything. I haven't. I've done a roller coaster. And again, so I'm very honest with people and tell people, well, I have good days, I have bad days. It's been lovely having the kids at home. It's not been so nice not being able to meet my colleague, you know, and I've been quite open in terms of sharing how I've been feeling about things.
Yeah, I think people appreciate that whole, you know, the whole thing of not presenting a bed of roses. If there's not a bed of roses to present, I mean,
absolutely,
you know, it then becomes very disingenuous. And I think people see through that very quickly. And I think the genuine nature of being kind of just being honest with people is so important, isn't it?
And quite often I've been asked a question, I think, oh, I don't know the answer to that, and I've said, I don't know, let me go and find out and I'll come back to you.
Yeah.
And I've done that, I've followed up, you know, and done that type of thing. Because again, you know, I'd love to think I know all the answers, but unfortunately I don't.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people very, very much accept that, don't they? I mean, I've lost count of the number of different webinars I've been on where you get asked a question, it's just impossible to know. And, you know, maybe there's been a government announcement that day and you know, absolutely, you just can't stay on top of things because it changes so, so quickly. So I think it's much better to say, sorry, I don't know, I'll come back to you than try and fluff it. So
no, absolutely.
So we touched a little bit at the outset about kind of the legalities behind being a platform provider, and I guess that must make things a bit complicated in terms of how it all works. And I think you've got quite a lot of tech and IT behind your systems, but tell us a little bit about the sorts of legalities and complexities that you have to think about in your role.
I think it's never ending. Every time I think I've cracked something, I get another one that comes along. I mean, I think the big thing is what we, as an employer, we employ a huge number of people. Mm-hmm. And therefore, one of the big things is about how we behave consistently with them.
Yeah.
And so for me, the legal bit is, you know, do they have the right to work in the UK? Have we checked that? Have we done that legally? Yes, we have. If they have come in on a visa, well, what point do we renew their visa checks? Mm-hmm. So we have in the system, we've built in that if somebody's visa is about to go out of date 3 months, then the system will flag it and we'll go through a process. So there's all that sort of real due diligence around right to work.
Yeah,
is there.
Yeah,
we then also check driving licenses, DBS checks, criminal records. So all the things that people need to know if somebody's coming into their business,
yeah,
we have to check those as well. And of course, the law changes on those so quickly.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's about keeping current with everything that you're doing. Holiday pay, you know, what's the right way to pay holiday pay? Do we make people take holiday pay or do we roll it into their wages?
Yes.
And again, we've decided that we'll do it the right way. Mm-hmm. So we have people that have to claim the holiday pay so that they can take the time off work because we're encouraging them to not work.
Yeah.
So it's all those type of things. And with, you know, with the Taylor report coming out, mm-hmm, there's been lots of things that have changed for us that we've had to go right. Are we still okay on that? Is that still correct? So the legal side is really important for us. But as I've said before, legally we've got to be correct, but morally we've got to be correct as well.
Yeah. And I guess some of the people who are looking for work through platforms are a bit surprised at the level of due diligence and checks that you have to do.
Well, the big thing, and it still disappoints me, if I'm honest, on two levels, it disappoints me. So from a worker's level, it disappoints me when they say, nobody else asks me to do this.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So... And you go, oh, okay, well, they should be. And then the other way, which I know this is a terrible thing to say, some hirers have said to me, you know, when we say to them, right, this is your national insurance contribution, this is, they go, oh, no, we don't pay national insurance.
What?
Yeah, wow. Because I say, well, it's a legal requirement.
Yeah.
And we have to say to them, well, I'm really sorry you can't work with us because that's not how we operate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've had some real surprises, things I never expected.
Yeah.
To have to face into, if you like, but I've had to deal with those as well.
Yeah, I hardly like to mention the B word of Brexit, but I'm sure I'm sure that's going to have another impact yet again. But let's just move swiftly on. On from
okay.
I have no idea where we're at on that, and maybe you can come back and talk to us around that time and share your woes with
us. I would love to. I'd love to. Yes.
But yeah, I mean, the legislation around this workspace does change hugely. And I think from what I can get from the government and things like that, they haven't finished implementing everything from Matthew Taylor's report. So I think there will still be more changes to come next year and into the future, won't there? So
Without a doubt. And it's even things, you know, like the minimum wage.
Yes.
So I'm a great believer in that we should be paying people more, et cetera. However, companies can't afford it.
Yeah.
And so we've gone through what we've gone through. And then, you know, if you say we've got another minimum wage increase, you go, that's going to be tough for people to manage.
Yeah.
So it's those things. Yeah. And our system won't allow you to put anything on a job on that doesn't pay minimum wage. So we're very clear on it. And we encourage you to pay living wage.
Yeah.
But those things do make a big impact.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess especially if people are needing a good number of temporary workers, for example, in the run up to Christmas and you know, different kind of logistics or supermarkets or whatever it might be. And I guess the impact of just a small pence increase in minimum wage will be significant on their overheads, won't it?
I think. Absolutely, absolutely significant. Yeah. And, you know, and it's a knock-on effect through everything. I mean, you know, we had to face into furlough.
Yes.
So when the government brought furlough out, what does that actually mean when you've got a team of 150? Who qualifies, who doesn't? How do you check whether they were, you know, it was a interesting time.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time on Zoom going, really? How? What?
I sympathise with you because at that time I was also trying to navigate it for my previous role, and they were changing stuff almost on a weekly basis. And my previous role, people were contractors, so they were on PAYE, similar to you, but they didn't necessarily we couldn't work out if they quite fitted and were eligible. And so, oh, it was just exhausting, and I feel your pain.
Yes.
But at least things have kind of moved on a little bit from there, and I think that they have tried to be a bit clearer.
And they have been, and you know, I think I'll genuinely say this, I think what the government did with furlough was amazing in terms of being able to keep people employed. What's also interesting though is hirers are now saying to me, when I mentioned before about, would you employ that worker for us? And if you employ that worker for us, would you be responsible for the furlough, or would we if it happened again? So people are obviously planning for, if it was to happen again, what would my liability be?
Yeah. And I guess you as a business need to obviously be clear on that as well for kind of your rates. And the other thing that is sort of a bit hidden, I think, from the way you do things is by employing people, presumably all employment law therefore applies. So things like discrimination, redundancy, and, you know, all
it's,
that.
It's everything from disciplinaries.
Yeah.
You know, so all that sort of down, you know, day to day, if somebody's done a good job, if somebody's not doing a good job, if they need disciplined, if the, you know, we need to do an investigation, we have to do all that as well.
So I guess balancing that with workers who are, in their mind, kind of very flexible workers and picking and choosing what they do, that must be interesting. I mean, hopefully it doesn't happen too much, because I guess you've got workers who want to work in that way. Otherwise, they wouldn't be wigwammers.
Absolutely.
And so they're making a conscious choice. But it's huge amounts of employment law to get your heads around.
It's a huge amount of employment law, and we spend a lot of time on it. I've got a great team that work with me on it. But the other thing that we do is we get all our hirers to rate our workers, and our workers to rate our hirers.
Yeah.
So both of them will rate each other out of five. One being, this worker was terrible, never let them darken my door, to five being, this person was great, I'd like to put them in my resource pool. And the worker does the same. And the reason we do that is to, A, with our workers, if they're a 4 or 5 star worker, they're offered more work.
Yeah.
So we're encouraging better performance. But the reason we also ask them to rate our hirers is, if a hirer is consistently giving low marks to somebody, but actually they're not behaving properly, it allows us to have the conversation. So, you know, lots of temps arrive and people don't give them proper instructions, don't tell them where to hang their coat up, where the toilet is, all those things that actually you need to know. Yeah. And that can ruin an experience for a wigwammer as well.
Yeah.
So we take that side of it very seriously as well. So we will talk to hirers about, actually, we've got people coming in next week. This is how the last set of people found it. Are these the things that we can maybe do to improve it?
Yeah, that's so important, because I guess that, and you'll have had this thought process, if it's just the hirer rating the wigwammer, then you've only got a one-way kind of system, and it might be unfair. There might have been a personality clash or something like that. I mean, let's hope not, because generally people need the workers to do the work, and that's more important.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you've obviously kind of had a thought process to drive that.
But it's about mutuality. Mutuality is very important for us. So it's got to be mutually beneficial for everybody involved.
Yeah.
And it's got to be mutually fair. So that for us is important.
Yeah. I think that's what I was trying to get to, that whole fairness side of things. And I think not all platforms are fair. I'm sure many are, but I think that might be kind of a top tip for workers to kind of look for in terms of being treated properly and properly valued and fairly. And actually that leads me onto, you know, how would a worker get themselves noticed in a platform? So obviously yours has this kind of feedback mechanism, but are there any other ways that they could get themselves noticed and give themselves a better chance of getting work? Perhaps thinking more about other platforms where they don't have the same systems that you've got.
Yeah, I think it's harder where you don't have that sort of measurement system. But what we would always say to people is, tell us as much as possible about yourselves.
Yeah. Okay.
So make sure your profile's good. Make sure your profile picture's good. You know, give yourself the best opportunity to sell yourself to somebody that might want to buy. So again, and I would say that for any platform, make sure that you've really encompassed who you are, what you do, a little bit, but sell your personality.
Yeah.
And you know, make sure you put. We've had some terrible headshots put onto our site, so make sure you've got a good headshot.
Yeah.
Fully clothed, all those type of things. We've had all sorts of bizarre ones.
Looking awake would be good, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Get out of your bed before you take the photo. Those type of things make a difference.
Yeah, it's like that on some networking sites, isn't it? You know, like I use LinkedIn quite a bit, and you see some profile pictures and you think, why have you put that on there? This is a business site, but you know, each to their own.
Absolutely.
Just finally then, have you got any kind of top tips for workers? So, I mean, we've talked a bit around a number of different things, and I think for me, and I shouldn't be leading you into your top tips, but I already am, aren't I? But for me, one of the things I love about the platform side of things is being able to minimize risk and being able to try different things. But what would be your tips for workers who are in that position of maybe looking at this for the first time? What sort of things should they look out for?
I think it's really important. If you've decided you want to work in a flexible way, it's thinking about what type of jobs that are automatically ones you would choose to do, and maybe some that you might not choose to do. And then think about, how do you train yourself ready for those opportunities? So we have an e-learning site, but there's a huge amount of information out on the net, courses, you know, 20 minutes on, go and do this. I would encourage people to look up, read lots, but also go out and discover lots about companies and jobs.
Yeah.
So think about it before that they go ahead and do it. And, you know, I, like yourself, you mentioned earlier, doing lots of things at home. I've done a huge amount of webinars, courses, all sorts of things, because I've had a little bit of time to do so. And I always learn something.
Yeah.
So I'd encourage anybody that's looking to try and do something slightly different in the marketplace, go out and do some of that learning.
Yeah.
Prepare yourself for it.
And I guess it's also about, you know, giving things a go. And you know, if you're not sure whether, you know, there might be an opportunity on your platform or on someone else's. And if they're not sure, well, give it a go. You're not going to lose by not.
Give it a go and ask a question.
Yeah.
So if you're not 100% sure, just ask. Yeah. You know, people will help you figure it out. And whether you ask, you know, like us at Red Wigwam, or whether you ask the hirer directly, people want you to do a great job. Nobody wants you to go out and not be great at it. They want you to do a great job. So just ask for help.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I think that probably wraps it up, unless there's anything else you wanted to particularly add. I mean, one of my favourite things about doing the research for today's conversation was that you set it up because you were frustrated as a customer. And so I kind of love that. Do you want to tell us a little bit around that?
Yeah, so my previous life, I ran a field marketing agency. And when a client would say to me, yeah, and I had a lot of staff. I had about 380 full-time staff, 800 part-time staff at that point. Gosh. But when a client would say to me, can you just do this? Trying to get my hands on really great part-time staff was really difficult.
Yeah.
So they didn't turn up. They didn't turn up wearing the right clothes. They didn't turn up with the right attitude. And it used to drive me bananas.
Yeah.
Likewise, I've mentioned I'm a mom of three boys. Those three boys are completely overstimulated. They can't walk unless their thumbs are going. They can't, you know, they watch a football match. They watch it with 10 friends around the world. And I just looked at them and thought, they're never going to work in the same way I did. 40 hours in front of the laptop every week. And I thought, actually, wouldn't it be great if you could take this amazing set of energy, experience, etc., and match it for people that just need great people when they need great people?
Yeah.
And that was the rationale behind Red Wigwam. That's what drove me to set the business up in the first place.
Oh, that's fantastic. I've always loved the stories behind you know what makes, you know, the business happen. Thank you for sharing that, because I genuinely love that. And it for me, that's a bit like you experienced a problem, if you like, from your perspective, and you thought, well, there's a gap there, I'm going to sort it, you know, why not?
Absolutely. But also sort it in a way which was a bit different than how everybody else was sorting, because in my view, the traditional way wasn't working. And that's where I thought the platform would work very differently.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time and joining us today, Lorna. I'm sure our listeners will have got a lot out of it. The research that we mentioned at the very start of this chat, I'm going to put it on the show notes that accompany the podcast. So if people want to download that, they can, and also kind of links to your website and things like that, if people want to get in touch. So
perfect. And if anybody's ever got a query, Lorna@redwigwam.com, I'm more than happy to answer anything.
Perfect. You might be sorry. Depends how many listeners we are. I kind of hope one day you'll be sorry about this podcast.
Yeah. I'll let you know.
All right. Brilliant. Well, thank you for joining us. And thank you, listeners. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you for listening to Empowering Agency Workers, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.